Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hey, kids, we welcome you back inside Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio for a Tuesday as the Pats celebrate that 34-13 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers to move to 13-0 on the season, and now you've got Revenge Gate. That's what you want to call it. Welcome you back inside the Playbook. I'm John Rook, and today we are broadcasting live from ESPN Zone in the heart of Times Square, Midtown Manhattan, New York. We were here earlier today for some Big East videotaping for a program called Inside the Big East, which many of you can see on local cable channels and a network affiliate in your area, wherever you may be. And so we're glad to have the opportunity to come to you from ESPN Zone here in Times Square. There are radio studios that they have situated. In fact, a program I believe that was on Sirius Satellite Radio is just completing here as we came to you. And so we'll be here until 4 o'clock Eastern time, basically taking you through the steps. Last week we had such a short work week with the Monday night game after Baltimore and kind of jumping right into the Pittsburgh game. And then, of course, we had the whole Anthony Smith thing happen last week. And quite frankly, let me kind of say this right off the top here. I cannot believe that in this day and age, with so much information that is out there and available to you, to me, to anybody else who follows the National Football League, I can't believe that even to a player who doesn't claim to really pay attention to the media. And, of course, a lot of the players say that they don't pay attention to the media, and yet they do. I think they all read. They do listen from time to time in the car. They do watch television. Players that say they don't pay attention, for someone to make a gaffe of that gargantuan proportions that Anthony Smith did last week and to have it just backfire on him deliciously as it did this past week, it just never ceases to amaze. Now, if you think you're going to get anything like that out of the Jets this week, I think you're sadly mistaken. You know, I think the Jets certainly, I think as we all realize now, are cut out of the Patriots mold from Eric Mangini being there to several Patriots players, former players being there to guys on the coaching staff who have, you know, the working knowledge of what goes on in New England, as I know we're all painfully aware. That kind of thing isn't going to happen this week. And if it does, then that player should be taken aside, and everybody should get one hit anywhere on his personage. Just slug him. Because to be that stupid is unconscionable. And Anthony Smith actually was pretty close to, I think he could probably win horse's ass of the year in the NFL. I think it's entirely possible. You know that Mike Tomlin wasn't happy after he said what he did last week? No way. Totally and completely one of the most idiotic things that he said when he was going to guarantee the win last week with the Steelers. The Steelers in the locker room. And I'm sure that they pulled him aside. I'm sure they said some things to him and said, you know, that's not the way we do things. You know, you need to be around for more than a couple of years before you, you know, make a boastful statement like that. Several things like that. But honestly, shame on the Steelers for not having better control of that situation. And, of course, the Patriots are just licking their chops because you all know the Patriots use motivational means better than any other team, maybe in recent professional sports history. They know how to take that chip on the shoulder and turn it into a boulder and use it however and by whatever means they need to use it. And they did that this last week. The Patriots spotted the Steelers, a 3-0 lead, and then they just took over from there. And, yes, I know there were some anxious moments when it got to be 14-13 and 17-13 into the second half, but did you ever feel like they didn't have the game in control similarly to what transpired the previous 2 weeks against Baltimore and Philadelphia? Did you think that perhaps you just kind of knew deep down that at some point in time they were going to just flip on that extra switch? See, I did. I kind of had that feeling. I had more of a feeling of confidence, personally, watching this team this past Sunday than I did with either of the Philadelphia or the Baltimore games. In fact, I said last week, during the late in the third quarter of the Baltimore game, I said, this is it. It's over. The streak is done. They're not going to win this game, and then we can kind of get this whole 16-0, 19-0 perfect season thing out of the way and concentrate on the matters at hand, and that's, you know, making sure you hold on to the top seed in the playoffs and try to get to the Super Bowl and win it, because that is the ultimate goal. But I think now that we're at this stage of 13-0, and they're the fifth team now in history to go 13-0 in a football season, I think that we're at the stage now history is starting to take over. Legend is starting to take over. I think possibly what also is taking over is the fact that now that you have a chance to make yourself almost immortal, I think the players now, while they might have said, and I largely believe them, gang, I largely believe them earlier in the year, when they said, you know, we're taking it one game at a time, they're giving you all the cliches, they're giving you all the right things, they're giving you the Patriot, you know, way of spewing things out. They're giving you the company line is what they're giving you, which is probably the right thing to do. But I believed them because that's how they've built what they've built in Foxborough. You know that. Everybody knows that now. And so now, I think human nature's got to take over a little bit. Now that you're this close, now that you can taste history, now that you realize that you can have your own little slice of immortality here, who wouldn't be motivated by that? Yes, you want to win the Super Bowl. People remember champions. But not only do you want to win the Super Bowl, now you want to win it. And now you want to you want to rub people's faces in it a little bit. And if that's a little greedy, well, then so be it, I suppose. But how many teams really have this chance? I mean, the Colts did a couple of years ago, right, in 2005. They were the last team to go 13-0 before they finally lost. And they lost, you know, a couple times and still. And ultimately, they didn't win the Super Bowl. Maybe it's because that became part of the focus. I think the Patriots have played this the right way. Plus, the schedule is setting up eminently well for them. They've got the Jets. They've got the Spygate revenge, if you will, as if they needed any motivation. Although, and I'll get into this a little bit later on, but I am not on the gravy train of beating the crap out of the Jets this week. I don't think it's going to happen. Everybody's saying 62-12, 63-10, 72-whatever. No, I actually don't think that's going to happen. I think that if we are to believe these guys, that they're going to focus on one week at a time, then we're going to really see. I think this week will be proof in the pudding. We're going to see how much they pay attention to all the other stuff that goes on around. Because if they put pedal to metal here, what reason would they have to do that other than quote-unquote revenge and getting their coaches back, you know, for what happened, you know, to Coach Belichick and the whole Eric Mangini, you know, ratting them out, you know, earlier in the year, the whole Spygate issue. So if they really put pedal to metal, that means that what they were telling us basically wasn't truthful, that there was a hidden agenda. I happen to think that there was some hidden agenda there. I happen to think that these guys do believe strongly in using whatever motivational tactics they can to get themselves up from week to week, because I think you have to do that, especially when you have an assemblage of talent that by far and away laps the field around the rest of the NFL. But I think this week is going to tell that story. And I think the Jets are going to come to play. Kind of like not so much the Eagles, but certainly like Baltimore 2 weeks ago. The Jets have nothing else to play for. They are 3-10. They lost this past week to Cleveland by, 6 points. So, you know, they're not going anywhere. If they win, yeah, they're no better than 4-10, but this is their playoff game. And I really don't think that you can underscore a team's ability to play motivated. Are the Patriots motivated? Yeah. I think the Jets better be motivated, because if they are not, then yes, it's entirely possible that it will be a long day. And I know many of you are looking forward to reveling in whatever punishment the Patriots deal out to the Jets on Sunday afternoon in Foxborough. I'm just not quite yet convinced that it's going to be that kind of a day. So this being a Tuesday here inside the playbook, normally on Tuesdays we nitpick, right? Nitpick Tuesdays. They're here, It's hard for me to find a lot of nitpicking. In fact, it sounds almost silly to be nitpicking over a team that's 13-0 and right on the precipice of becoming perhaps the all-time greatest team for a single season in NFL history. But nevertheless, it's what we do because we nitpick very well around here. And so I'm going to give you a couple of nitpicks that I have. And then I very much would like for you to nitpick. And, you know, frankly, one of my nitpicks is, why do I nitpick on Tuesdays? It's kind of hard to nitpick with perfection, to mess with perfection here, and yet we're doing it, because it does create a little bit of a conversation. But I think we saw some things on Sunday that, you know, certainly are worth talking about. So webradio@patriots.com is the email address. That's how you reach us here in the program, webradio@patriots.com. You can also utilize the telephone at 508-543-7482. Again, the area code 508, the number 543-7482. Coming up a little bit later in the program, Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us, as he normally does on Tuesdays. We will also hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick a little bit later on in the program today. And I want to hear from you. This is your time to get off, you know, whatever comments you have on your chest. Maybe you have a beef with something that I've said or something that I've done or something that we've done here on Patriots.com radio or what the PFW guys have done. I mean, I'm not going to speak for those guys, but quite frankly, you know the drill. You know how it goes. And then we'll see if we can't, take things apart in normal discourse here and talk about it. Let me give you, first of all, my nitpick for Sunday. I realize that in the overall scheme of things, it really doesn't mean much now, but I'm going to bring up a problem. Last couple of weeks, I've had one email in particular, and forgive me, I've forgotten your name, but it's the one guy that has emailed each of the last 2 weeks of the program saying, what is up with Richard Seymour? And like he's disappeared, like he's not really a member of the team, and like he's come back and yet he hasn't played, and he hasn't been anywhere near the capacity that we're used to seeing a guy like Richard Seymour play. And I've said, well, hold on a second, big fella. You know, first of all, I don't think you're giving Richard Seymour the benefit of the doubt. He's really right now just finishing his preseason training camp, and he's in early season shape, and he's trying to get himself in midseason shape by the time the playoffs roll around because of his injury, because of his knee surgery. All right. And so I said, just, you know, hold off on the criticism just yet, because I don't think it's entirely fair. But based on what we saw this past week against Pittsburgh, and I know that Pittsburgh's style of play is physical, it's run at you, it's, you know, grind it out. You know, they've got great receivers, but, you know, Pittsburgh's physical prowess has been legendary in the league, and the Patriots were certainly ready for that. But the Steelers also bludgeoned the Pats on the ground this past week. I have to admit that that's a little disconcerting. 181 yards rushing against the Patriots' defense. 181 on the Patriots' defense on Sunday. Now, when you consider that probably somewhere in the vicinity, and I've seen Mike Reese do this in the Globe, and I've kind of looked at it through the numbers here as I have the individual stats in front of me, 50-plus yards out of that 181 came basically against what is termed a lighter Patriots defense. You know, they had guys like Larry Izzo in it, Backer and Pierre Woods, and they were playing nickel and dime packages in the secondary. And okay, so there are a lot of things that you wouldn't have your big guys up front, and so that would be conducive to perhaps, you know, punching it up the middle a little bit and stretching a defense out. And I'll certainly allow for some of that. But even then, if you eliminate that, you're still allowing the Steelers to run for about 130. You let Willie Parker go for 124. You let him rip off a 30-yard run, which was kind of like a gasper. It's kind of like, what was that? He ripped off, what was it, another 19-yarder early in the second half as well. And so I'm telling you, I do believe that because this is where guys like Richard Seymour, this is where they have to stand up. This is where they have to not allow, they have to fight through a double team. They have to, you know, maintain, you know, their two-gap mentality to let the linebackers make plays. And then on top of that, this is where the Patriots are really going to miss Rosie Colvin. We talked about this a little last week after we were discussing some of the ramifications following the Baltimore game over his being put on IR for the year. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, well, no, I think they've got enough depth to be able to overcome it. Now, I'm not so sure. And so that's basically where my nitpick lies here. Number one, I do now. I am at the stage where I want to see more from Seymour defensively. And admittedly, I saw an article that was written in the Providence Journal this week already about how Seymour still says he's getting back into shape. He's not 100%. So if I'm an opposing team, let's say like the Jets or even the Dolphins and certainly the Giants, which are the three left on the schedule, and you'd have to say at least at this stage the Giants would seem to be most equipped to give the Patriots a battle before all is said and done here. And I'm not going to underscore the next 2 weeks, but let's just face it, on record alone, Giants are the team that have something to play for. If I'm either one of those teams, I'm doing exactly what the last three teams have done, and I'm trying to keep the ball out of the Patriots' offensive hands like the Steelers did, like the Ravens did, like the Eagles did, and I'm trying to pound away at that middle, and I'm running right at Richard Seymour. Until he says, enough, and I can stop you, I'm running right at him. I'm running at a perceived strength on this Patriots defense. So I guess my nitpick really revolves around wanting to now begin to see what Richard Seymour really can do. That's number one. And then, of course, number two, sometimes I'm looking at the percentage of plays that the Patriots linebackers were out on the field against the Steelers. And I'm thinking, wow, you're still getting a lot of time out there from Junior Seau. I think he was out there like 50 of the 68 snaps. That the Steelers took an offense. Teddy Bruschi less so. I think it was 44 out of 68 snaps that he was there. So that's not quite as bad, but I'm thinking, I really believe that it's in the Patriots' best interest, especially if they're, you know, and they played, I think, mostly 4-3 in the second half of that game on Sunday night, so that was less of a rotating factor. They were rotating more defensive linemen than they were the linebackers. I'm still thinking I'd like to see more of Pierre Woods getting some action. I'm still thinking that I'd like to see, you know, and I'm not sure why, Brandon Merriweather. I'd like to see more guys in the mix, in the rotation, in the secondary, and in the linebacker core, just to make sure that everybody's had the opportunity and to see if you can't continue to play with some combinations a bit in order to find a team that is rock solid for the three games they need to win in the postseason to ultimately become the Super Bowl champ. And so I guess that, you know, if that's a nitpick, that's a nitpick. If it's not a nitpick, well, then you certainly were right to tell me that. But I guess it's kind of like saying, ooh, look, Cindy Crawford has a mole on her face. You know, it's really hard to find a lot of things wrong. And I guess that's what I'm doing. The run defense for the Patriots here is the mole on the face. And while you can certainly overlook that, and you can certainly see the beauty elsewhere in the finished product and realize what it is, the fact is that it's still there. And you want it to go away if it can, at all possible. You want it to move. You want it to get out. You don't want to look at it. And so I don't want to look at the Patriots' weaknesses here, even though I know it's there. And I'm hoping, because if you're able to get through at 16-0, And you're able to win this game, and you're able to win against the Dolphins, and you're able to beat the Giants in the last game of the regular season, so you finish the perfect regular season, you know that when the playoffs come around, depending upon who it is, you know, you're liable to face Pittsburgh again, you could face San Diego again, yes, you are most likely going to face Indianapolis again. All three teams that certainly look like they could stack up ready to face the Patriots, the Patriots have already played and defeated this year, adds to their favor. But you know what? Yes, you know them, but they also know you, and they've seen your team, and they've seen your defensive liabilities late in the season, and you know they're going to attack it. You have to. It's common sense. You know? It's the Patriots' Achilles heel right now is being able to stop the run, which is why I was totally stunned on that fourth and goal play when they ran that inside reverse, you know, to Hines Ward. I was floored by that. Give the ball to Nache Davenport. Now, again, I'm not advocating that. Obviously, I'm glad the Patriots stopped him, but I couldn't believe the choice of play calls. I thought that was just abysmal. You know, shame on the Steelers for blowing that opportunity. I don't think it would have made a hill of beans, you know, difference-wise in the outcome of the game. I don't think it would have had any effect on the game at all. But the fact of the remains is it was a stupid call. Punch it up the middle. And so I think that's what teams are going to continue to try to do. I think that's what they're going to look at to do that. against the Patriots. And so I want them as a team, as a defensive unit, to be ready for that possibility. The teams are going to come out and do that. So that's my big nitpick. After the week 14 win, 13th win of, in a row in the regular season over the Pittsburgh Steelers. What is yours? What is your nitpick? Webradio@patriots.com. If you have one, email it. If you want to call us, 508-543-7482. That's how you get a hold of us. All right, we're going to get to some of those emails in a couple of moments. I'm going to take a quick timeout here, and then we'll get to some emails. Again, Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us here in just a little bit. We'll also later on in the program hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. We are coming to you today live from Midtown Manhattan, right in the heart of New York City, Times Square. ESPN Zone is where we're located today. And no matter where you are located today, we want to hear from you right inside Patriots Playbook.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact, too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sackatuck sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that's appropriate. Bad to the bone they are. Pats rolling over the Steelers, rolling over the NFL at 13-0. Maybe getting ready to roll over the Jets this Sunday in Foxborough. Goodness. Yeah, times are going very well for this football team. They seem, after kind of sputtering the last couple of weeks against the Eagles and the Ravens, they seem to be back on track. We welcome you inside again, the Patriots Playbook, for a Tuesday. Pats and the Jets get ready to go here in Week 15. John Rook with you yet again, coming to you from the ESPN Zone in Midtown Manhattan, the heart of Times Square. Kind of appropriate, don't you think? It is Jets game week, and here we are in New York City doing the show. Again, I mentioned off the top of the program, if you're just joining us, we were here doing some videotaping for a television program called Inside the Big East, which is a piece that the Big East Conference does that's seen on ESPNU and many of the regional sports channels, you know, on the satellite and cable systems near you, and several local affiliates as well in the markets of all the schools that are in the Big East Conference. And so we were taping a lot of those things today, and it's kind of like, hey, let's stay here and do the show. They got a nice radio studio here at ESPN Zone. It's the Dick Schaap radio studio. Of course, Dick Schaap, many of you remember his years covering sports for ABC and for ESPN, and now his son Jeremy does a great job on ESPN television, and the radio studio here named in Dick Schaap's honor. And so that's where we're located today, watching the fans look at all the big screens here at ESPN Zone. If you've never been here, or you've never been to one of the ESPN Zone themed restaurants and sports bars, do yourself a favor. It's quite the trip, quite the treat. In fact, you oftentimes come in here and you try to figure out, all right, which monitor do I actually want to watch? Because there's so much going on. And the best part about it is, if you're lucky to get one of the front row seats, you know, in their main seating area, you've got the two huge HD big screens, and then you've got other smaller monitors that are lined up in rows next to them. They call them feed monitors. And when you're sitting in this plush padded booth here and being served lunch or dinner or whatever it is that you're there to do, you can punch up your own feed on your own little monitor right there at your table. And you get not only the video feed, but the audio of whatever it is that you want to watch. So it's very cool. And then, of course, up on the third floor of this facility, they have the game room, which is something that my son Austin loves. And every time we come to New York, we have to make a stop at ESPN Zone. Why? Because, well, we just do. It's what you do. And I've had the pleasure and privilege to doing several radio shows here over the last few years inside the Dick Schaap Studios. And so we're doing that here today, and we're glad that we can do it for you. And, yes, it's appropriate. It's appropriate to be in New York on New York Jets game week, right? And, you know, I have a feeling that the Jets aren't stupid. They're not going to say anything that is going to further inflame the Patriots and their feelings toward the Jets and toward Eric Mangini in particular this week. So they're not going to pull an Anthony Smith. By the way, was there any better justice done by like Smith than what the Patriots did to him and burning him not once but twice deep, especially on the lateral to Moss and the throwback to Brady and Jabbar Gaffney? I mean, that was just, I mean, you know, you laugh out loud when you see things like that, and it's like, could it be any better? Could it get any better? No. No, it couldn't. And, you know, that was absolute. You just don't see comeuppance that is that clear and decisive. Sometimes you have to wait for it, you know. The old saying, that a wise old gentleman in the NBA a number of years ago by the name of George Gervin. You remember the Iceman George Gervin, who used to play for the Spurs when I was doing Spurs broadcasts? Ice used to tell me, he said, "Rookie, what goes around comes around." Now, that's not, you know, Shakespeare, it's not, you know, Plato, it's not, you know, a lot of philosophy, but I always remember what Ice told me, and it's true. And it doesn't really matter when it comes around. The fact is that it will come around. You just don't know when it'll be. But it came around real quick for Anthony Smith, didn't it? It was just perfect. In fact, again, you had to laugh out loud at what happened. So, you know, congratulations to the Patriots for taking advantage of that. And you know that they turn around motivation better than any other team in the NFL does. And so the Jets are not going to be dumb. They're not going to do that this week. And I saw the quote that that David Bowens, Jets linebacker, had to the New York media here in New York yesterday. And he said, "They've definitely had a certain swagger ever since then," referring to when the Patriots beat them earlier in the year at 38-14. That, of course, being at the Meadowlands. And Bowen says, I'm sure everybody is saying that we don't have a shot at winning this game, but I also know the character of the guys in this room. We think we can win. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they think they can win. And you know what? That's as close to something that is could be considered inflaming as you're going to get this week. Because I really don't think the Jets are stupid. And again, why? Because I mentioned earlier in the show, they're cut out of the same mold as the Patriots. They're not as successful. They probably don't have, in fact, it's obvious, they don't have near as much overall talent. Maybe on the field as well as on the sideline, yet. But they're not dumb. And the Patriots play this game better than anybody in the league. The Jets are going to follow suit. The Jets should internalize this thing anyway. They need to play from within anyway. I mean, they have nothing else to play for except being the one team. How good would it feel if you're a Jets fan, if you're a Jets player, if you're a Jets coach, how good would it feel knowing that you knocked the Patriots off after Spygate, after everything else, that you knocked them off and you kept them from achieving perfection and you kept them from their slice of immortality? Oh, it'd be great. It'd feel unbelievable. You'd still be probably ticked off to the nth degree that your team is only 4-10 and you're not going anywhere this year. And it's like, ah, all this wasted time, all this wasted chance, all this wasted opportunity. And what do we get out of it? Nothing up to this point in time until you find a way to pick off the Pats. I personally don't think it's going to happen. But as I mentioned earlier, I really don't believe it's going to be the 60-something to nothing route that everybody seems to think it is. I know that 68,000 fans are coming to Gillette this next Sunday looking for blood. They're smelling it. It's going to be a shark tank at Gillette. That will be the environment. And you will have as much emotion for a game against a 3-10 team as maybe has ever existed in NFL history this coming Sunday. It's because of the whole Spygate issue. It's because of the whole Eric the Rat issue. And whatever you want to do to get your own self up for the game, sure, it's fine. It's appropriate. It's allowed. You can do that. And I'm sure there will be an extent of that on the Patriots' side of the field. Has to be. They're human. They read. They hear. They listen. They understand. They talk. They know. All right? All right. As Bill Parcells used to say. So to that end, the Jets aren't giving them any more cannon fodder. Not going to happen. They got beat 24-18 to Cleveland on Sunday. They know the challenge. They know the Patriots will undoubtedly try to run up the score if they get the chance to do so. You know, but, you know, I'm not sure that that really even concerns the Jets that much, to be quite honest with you. The Jets know that they can play in Foxborough. They've played well there. Hey, do you remember they beat the Patriots in Foxborough last year? You know, that's what started the whole icy handshake thing between Bill and Eric Mangini to begin with. But when you look at it, do you really think a Jets team that's quarterbacked, first of all, by Kellen Clemens can do it? Can a Jets team that's had, you know, real problems, certainly inconsistencies at worst on the offensive line in creating opportunities for Thomas Jones, can you think that they can hold on to the football long enough to keep the ball out of Brady and company's hands? Probably not. Defense has had a plethora of problems as well. They're pedestrian against the run. In fact, they're bad against the run. You know, they're mediocre, I think it was. I looked this morning, 11th against the pass in the league. So certainly they're decent in the secondary, but Patriots just torched the NFL's best secondary for 399 yards this past Sunday. So I don't think that that's going to scare anybody. So when you look at it on paper and you compare the pluses and the minuses, well, I think we all realize that this could be, you know, a rout of epic proportions. I just happen to think that it won't be. I think we all thought that the Eagles game was going to be like that. Okay, you know, you excuse the little blip on the radar screen. We all thought that the Ravens game was going to be the game that the Patriots get back into gear, and it didn't quite turn out like that, did it? No, it didn't. And so you're thinking, all right, well, now the Patriots are really in trouble. The Steelers are going to give them a challenge. The point spread is only, what, 10.5 before kickoff, and there were a lot of people, a lot of media, national media, saying, oh, you know what, the Steelers have a chance to win this game. Forget the point spread. Steelers are going to win this game. And look what happened. So which team do we see? Which style of play do we see? I tend to think that, yes, if they're given the opportunity, that sure, the Patriots are human. I feel like they will try to get have their coaches back here, and they will, you know, they will put an effort out there that will be like few other efforts that they've had this season on the football field. But you know what? That can only go so far. How long can hatred motivate you? And I think that's what we're going to see. Certainly from the 68,000 plus in the fans on Sunday, we're going to see hatred. We hate the Jets. Do the players hate the Jets? I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. And so that's why I'm hesitating to say this is going to be the route to end all routes. I won't give you a score yet. We'll save that for later in the week. I'm not going to give you a prediction yet. We're going to save that for later in the week. But I want you to begin thinking about that. Enter it into your comments. See whether you agree or disagree. And if you think that this game is going to be a complete and total blowout, then that's fine. Tell me why. That's okay. But if you're thinking like I am, I want to hear from you too. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's our telephone number as well. All right, let's get a couple of these emails in here. And again, Brian Lowe from Patriots Video News will join us here in a little bit. And Bill Belichick will also be later on in the program. This one comes from Rob in Brisbane, Australia. He says, why would we draft McFadden? I think everybody realizes that we have serious problems at linebacker and defensive back, especially if Rodney, Gay, Jr., Teddy, Vrabel, all gone next year, and Colvin gets released. Well, first of all, I'm not sure that all of that happens. I don't think they're going to re-sign Asante Samuel. I've told you that. I've said this on this program. And because of that, I think that makes Randall Gay certainly a key factor. I think Rodney Harrison comes back again. I don't know about Seau. I think if the Patriots go on and win this thing, I think he may try to go out on his high horse, which I think is what everybody expects him to do. I'm not sure that Teddy Bruschi is going to retire, and I don't think Mike Vrabel will, because Vrabel arguably is the Pro Bowl entity on the Patriots defense this year. Why should he retire? He shouldn't. Colvin, I don't know that he gets released either. I think the Patriots give... He was just getting back into the kind of rosy Colvin shape Patriots thought they were getting when he signed as a free agent out of Chicago before he injured his hip against Philadelphia a few years ago. Anyway, says, if we can't get Dansby from the Cardinals in free agency, we actually don't have enough linebackers to start. Why draft McFadden when we can trade down where Laurinaitis, Kaysen, Maloga, Kenny Phillips, Malcolm Jenkins, and Dan Connor will probably still be on the board, and we can get a second and third round draft pick, which we are losing this year. Since week 8, fourth round pick Ryan Grant has been the NFL's leading rusher. We can get a good running back later in the draft. All right. So there you go. Actually, Rob, I totally agree with you. As tantalizing as it sounds to think that you could end up with a number two pick, thanks to the San Francisco 49ers' ineptness, if they stay that way, and as unbelievably enticing as it would be to add a guy like Darren McFadden into your offensive mix, you know, with Brady and the receivers that he will have coming back next year, and a guy like Maroney, I happen to agree with you 110%. I don't think there's any way the Patriots do that. I'd like for him to do it. That would be my preference, but I think you're right. I think football sense says, you know, forget the glitz and the glamour, and you have to go for, you know, trying to make your team stronger from top to bottom rather than go for the show. And I've been critical of Lawrence Maroney and his performance all year long on this program. And, you know, hey, for those that, you know, that have been listening to the show since the start of the year, you know that already. And I think Lawrence Maroney is not a bad back, but I think he's a back that needs to have a running mate. He's not a feature single back. He needs to have a Corey Dillon. He needs to have a Sammy Morris. He needs to have somebody with him. And if they were able to get McFadden and Maroney together, whew, dynamite. Unbelievable. I just don't think it's going to happen. I tend to agree with you. I think that they will trade down. They'll probably look for multiple picks. They'll look linebacker or defensive line, but probably linebacker, because that's, I think we all realize, where they're really going to have the need, especially if Seau does retire. And I see that being more of a definitive, being more of a slam dunk type of thought process. So anyway, we'll see as time progresses, but at least those are my initial thoughts. Thanks, Rob. Okay, next up we have, as the computer loads, Thank you so much for taking time. By the way, computer here has just been unbelievable. Oh, good. Click to try again. Nice. Thank you so much. This is always good to know, you know, when the internet and everything has been great here all day long and all of a sudden nothing. Ah, here we go. Okay. This one comes from Chris, who's in the Bronx. Chris, you cross town, basically. Come on over. He says, Sunday was my birthday. My wife and I got to spend it at Gillette with two season ticket holding friends. That, of course, put me in a great mood this week, so I figured I'd spread the joy a little bit. Glad for the win, mostly because just one more means the home field bye belongs to New England. That is true. Few questions, if you'd be so kind. First one, well, it says this is for Tom, but Tom's already gone, so sorry about that. He says, notice during the game, Roethlisberger threw away from Asante Samuel on most of his passes. One or two bubble screens were the exceptions, I believe. Is this indicative of Asante's prowess or the other's lack of it? Either way, don't they have to sign Asante? No, they don't have to sign Asante, number one. Number two, I'm sure that they threw away from him simply because they do respect his abilities. And they've seen his ability to be able to make a break. And number three, no, they don't have to sign him. And I don't think they're going to sign him. I think the Patriots, again, place a value on the position. Samuel is going to exceed that value, and they're probably going to encourage him to go get his money. If Asante stays, it's because Asante wants to stay. No other reason for it. Chris says, three play calls I disagreed with. One, the short kickoff where Pittsburgh ended up with the ball at their own 45. A real momentum killer. Yep. Going with an empty backfield in short yardage situations. I understand I shouldn't mess with success, but it seems that even the afterthought of a running game can come in handy someday. I agree, and that's another nitpick issue. You know, the fact is the Patriots didn't defend the run against Pittsburgh, but they ran the ball, what, nine times? Nine times? And still put up 34 points on the Steelers. You're right. I think that at least, you know, the semblance of a running game would be nice. And number three, on pitch side, the fourth and goal call, if an empty backfield spreads out the defense, why hand off the ball to a non-running back and send him to the outside? As a Pats fan, that call made me happy. 110% agreed, Chris. That could win the call as stupid call of the year. One final question. Gaffney's recent production has taken away from Stallworth's numbers. Does this mean anything, or is it just a case of not enough passes to go around? I think right now it's a case of just not enough passes to go around, number one. Number two, I think to some extent teams are looking towards Stallworth, if not out and out keying on him, which leaves a guy like Gaffney open depending upon the receiver package that the Patriots have on the field at any given time. And so because of that, you know, his opportunities are fewer. I also think that, you know, my guess is that Stallworth is probably odd man out based on his contractual situation that I know, and they probably allow Dante to try to cut himself a deal someplace else and focus their energies on re-signing Moss and then, you know, keeping Gaffney, who's had a very good year. Obviously, Welker is signed for another year or two, and then maybe allowing a guy like Chad Jackson or Kelly Washington to play into that playing time that Dante Stallworth is still getting. Again, that's just my particular assessment at this stage of the game, but that's kind of how I'm looking at it right now. And thank you for the email. Webradio@patriots.com. Let's see. This one comes from TG in the land of disgruntled Jets fans. I'm sure you guys hit all the angles. I'm very pleased with the win. No complaining here. Just one question. What's up with Dante Stallworth? Even the shock jock of sports media, Mike Felger, was asking if my boy Jabbar has surpassed him as the last read option. Yeah, I agree with that. I think he has. Would Bill Belichick rather see a blowout or a shutout of the Jets? Well, that's hard to say. My guess would be shutout. Because when you put a goose egg on somebody, I mean, you've given them no shot, no chance. That's a beatdown. That can be demoralizing. 72-3 or 38-0. Which would you prefer? And I think that's a great question, so I'm going to open it up to the fans. I'm going to open it up to everyone who's listening right now. Webradio@patriots.com. Given your choice, let's be a little bit more realistic, though, all right? 63-13 or 38-0. Which one is more demoralizing? Which one would you rather see and why? Webradio@patriots.com. I think that's a great question. Thank you for that, TG. Stripper sends this. Looks like they may have the wild card secure. By week 17, do you think they'll play all their starters the whole game or rest them? He's saying, is it likely that the Giants will sit many starters? Look, if they have the wild card secure by week 17, yeah, I think that they'll rest their starters. I'm not so sure that it's going to happen. Apparently, I've heard that from a couple of people. They think the Giants may need to win in order to assure that five spot in the NFC. But if they have it locked in, yes, I do think that they'll rest their starters because the game will mean nothing. Beating the Patriots, we don't need to beat the Patriots. We need to worry about the Giants. We need to worry about ourselves, not whether or not New England can go 16-0. Giants will prepare for the playoffs because I'm sure they'll feel like they can win, and then they can worry about it on down the line if they ever get the chance to face the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So, yes, I do think that they will rest their starters if they have secured the wild card. If they haven't, they're going to play. I think it's that simple. This email comes from John, who says, I was at the game and couldn't be happier to hear all those loud voices in yellow shirts. Silenced. It was a great game, and I was thrilled, but shouldn't the refs call penalties no matter what the score? It was getting a bit ridiculous. The three I saw that were frustrating were Welker, already out of bounds, getting popped, Brady taking a forearm to the head, WWE style, and not to mention late. And the last one, Pierre Woods, tackled well after the play was over, after he was leaving the field, although that was called. That type of behavior should have been fined. I totally agree with that. And you're right. I think that it seemed to me to be a little lackadaisical on the efforts of the officials, and shame on them if they didn't see those plays. Shame on them if they didn't see them. It's their business to see the cheap shots. And in those particular instances, they're all cheap shots. All of them, all three of them. You've got to be looking. It's kind of like, you know, they tell you to keep your head on a swivel when you're running in the open field, right? Because you just never know where that hit's going to come from. Well, the official's got to do the same thing. The official's got to keep his head on a swivel. He's got to know it's coming because, you know, a lot of times, especially, you know, and the Patriots, we've talked about this all year long. You know, the Patriots, when they're beating up on people, and if they are, you know, rubbing the score in there, then quite frankly, you know, they're going to be a cheap shot or two being taken. We've talked about that possibility even coming to Tom Brady. They've got to be looking for it. And for them to miss not one, not two, but three, well, they missed two. They didn't miss Pierre Woods, obviously. But I totally agree. I think that's a great point, John. And you're absolutely right. That would be another good nitpick, you know, from the game. The officials just, you know, why do they miss these things? They shouldn't. Somebody's going to really get hurt and hurt bad unless the officials do a better job of pointing that out and calling a foul a foul. Andy in Vermont says, the Steelers are not as good as everybody thought. Even I figured they'd be a tougher opponent. But as I told everyone at work and all of my friends, I expected a statement game from the Patriots, just like earlier in the year when the Pats played the Cowboys. They want to prove they are the best team in football, period. Does not matter who lines up on the other side of the football. They have not overlooked anyone at all, nor do I think they will. 13-0, what a year, Patriots rule. Thank you, Andy. They have done a good job of focusing on the opponent. You are certainly right about that. And worried about who's on the other side of the ball. You're absolutely right about that. And just, you know, taking care of business. That's why this week against the Jets is so intriguing because, honestly, you want to know how much of this quote-unquote hatred factor comes into play. We know the fans are going to have it. The fans are going to be spewing venom. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's the rubbernecker factor. When you're in the highway, you're on the highway and you're looking over the other side at the big wreck on the other side and slowing down traffic behind you. Okay? Why do you look? Because you can, because it's morbidity. For some reason, we as human beings are lured to it. We have to see and revel, if not, you know, be pleased about in somebody else's misfortune and think, thank God that's not me. And I think that's the attitude and the mentality that the fans are going to take into the game on Sunday. Thank God the Jets aren't the Patriots. So you're going to be out for blood. It's going to be, like I said, it's the rubbernecker factor. You're going to be looking at the big train car wreck over the other side of the field, and you're wondering how bad can it get? That's what I think. Dave in Abington, Virginia. John, the only nitpick I can make is ESPN. Tom Jackson and Coach Dickey will not ever say anything positive about what the Patriots are doing. Interesting point. I think, Dave, we realize that Tom Jackson has long had a problem with the Patriots, and I think it's because his access has been somewhat shut off to the team after his, you know, let me make this perfectly clear. They hate their coach comment, which was totally and completely erroneous, and he had as much egg on his face as anybody at that network has ever had on their face. Now, I think Tom Jackson actually does a very good job. I think he's a very good analyst. I like him personally. He's a nice enough guy. He's always been nice enough to me. You know, when I've been in their studios and done shows from over there, I don't have any personal problem with him at all. But, I mean, Tom, you do have to kind of balance it out a little bit. Your disdain, you know, for the Patriots has to, you know, you got to at least mask it a little bit, right? Now, it's also possible, Dave, let me at least add this to the possibility that maybe guys like TJ and Mike Ditka are playing devil's advocate for the sake of argument. They do that a lot there. We do that a lot in talk radio. Sometimes you take a side of an argument just to create conversation, even though you might not personally believe in it. But you have to have the courage of your convictions in order to be able to sell it to the listening audience to create, you know, conversation, to create interest. And frankly, that may be part of what's going on from ESPN's point of view. It's kind of like, all right, well, TJ, since you've already kind of started being the Patriots contrarian, why don't you take this side and we'll give somebody else the other side and we'll just go with it like that. So it may appear to you to see that, you know, a guy like Jackson hates the Patriots. I don't think Mike Ditka hates the Patriots. In fact, I've heard him on ESPN radio several times. He comes on usually on Mondays to recap the weekend with Mike and Mike in the morning. And he's actually been very complimentary to the Patriots. And he says, you know, he thinks the Patriots will go down as the greatest team of all time. He's already said that. And he's gone on record as saying that on national radio. So, you know, maybe you've just kind of picked and choose your chances to see him. And he's just had something to say that you deemed negative when you saw him. But I have not heard that from Mike Ditka. I have heard that from Tom Jackson. And I think maybe he's just kind of taken the role of the contrarian, to be honest with you. All right, Kenneth from Huntington Beach, California, checks in with his nitpicking. Oh, you got several here, Ken. Wow. And I thought I was bad nitpicking, you know, nitpicking on a 13-0 team. Ken says, nitpicking, Maroney isn't running well. Maybe as simple as the fact that he hasn't had a chance to get started yet this year and is really getting less than 10 carries a game, but it's a problem. Ellis Hobbs is exploitable. I'm getting tired of seeing long completions and touchdown passes that are against Hobbs. You know, that's another good one. I guess I probably could have added that one to the mix earlier. Just didn't do it, though, did I? But you're right. That's actually a good nitpick. I think you're going to get the nitpick of the day there, Ken. That one, it kind of slipped, and I'm glad you brought it up. I think he is exploitable. You know, every once in a while he comes up and he makes a great play, but it seems to me more often than not that he's not making that play. Somebody beats him. Somebody burns him for a play that looked to be coverable, right? Ken also says, run defense is suspect. Any offense that can run has been running and well. 180-plus yards of run offense by the opponent is nothing to smile about, even if the game was won. Well, there you go. That is definitely my nitpick. If run defense is nitpick number one, Ellis Hobbs, then it would be 1A. How's that? Maroney's been a nitpick all year, so, you know, I'm not going to harp on him in particular today. But, yeah, that's absolutely correct. 180 yards plus of run offense by an opponent is absolutely nothing to be happy about. I don't care if you're up 34-13. And he also says, receivers versus physical defensive backs. I'm not going to take the stance that the officials aren't calling interference, but rather say the officials are going to let DBs play against the Pats. So the receivers need to learn how to get through that. That's a good point. I think because of some of the physical plays out there, I think that has something to do with Randy Moss and a couple of the drops he's had. I think we saw one slip through his hands, potentially for a touchdown on Sunday as well. But honestly, you know, because, you know, if you're not a possession receiver and not a guy that's used to going over the middle and absorbing the blows and the punishment, then, yeah, that's going to be different. If a receiver, if a DB is being physical against you, yeah, you're going to put that head on a swivel, as I talked about earlier. So, yeah, I think that's, if the officials are going to let DBs get up and bump them, then, yeah, you're right. They definitely have to learn how to get through that and get used to it. Good points by you, Ken. He says, the things that impressed me, Vince Wilfork, Mike Vrabel, Kevin Faulk, when we need to run, he has been a guarantee this year. Totally true. and Wes Welker. If he's not the steal of the century, I don't know who is. Randy Moss is certainly talented this year, but wow, Welker has been amazing as well. You know, as far as I'm concerned, we said this, what, 6 weeks ago when we first started talking Pro Bowl stuff. Isn't the Pro Bowl deadline to vote in today, I think it was? Was it today or yesterday? I think it's today. That Welker was a Pro Bowl player. Probably won't get to the Pro Bowl because of some of the numbers being put up by some of the other receivers. And maybe more of the spectacular play like Moss with 19 touchdowns now, three away from tying Jerry Rice's all-time single-season record. But fact is that Welker deserves it. And in terms of most valuable to his team, if Brady is the most valuable player in the NFL, I am willing to step out. And I don't think it's a huge stretch to say that Wes Welker is the most valuable to his team because of the target, of the ability, his ability to go get the ball in tough situations over the middle, and because he's so hard to guard, so hard to defend, because he's so low to the ground, he's valuable. And he deserves to go to the Pro Bowl. And he has been the steal of the century. Thoughts, he says, Ken says. If the Patriots go 16-0, I really don't want to see a celebration. The 72 Dolphins won the Super Bowl, and in my opinion, Patriots haven't done the same until they also win the Super Bowl. I agree with you. And frankly, I'd be shocked, if not chagrined, I'd be shocked if the Patriots do any sort of indicating otherwise other than, hey, let's get ready for the playoffs. 16-0 doesn't mean squat. Doesn't mean a thing unless they win the Super Bowl. Heavy play by secondary players, especially in defense, would be very nice to see this week and next. We can lose two of the next three games and still have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Well, that certainly is cutting it down to the quick, although I don't think anybody wants to see that, right, Ken? Thank you. Well thought out email. Appreciate that. All right, John sends a nitpick, and he says, as happy as I am with the way the season is going, there is always something to complain about. Did Dante Stallworth get on Bill's bad side? Although off to a slow start, he should be by week four a solid asset. As much as I'd like to see the Brady Moss show, I'd love to see more Stallworth. Running game. Do we need one? Well, apparently not, but come on. Maroney not making the showing we hope for, but is it because he's really not that good or because we hardly use him? Well, honestly, it's a combination of both. I think that's a good point, John, and I think it's a combination of both. Sammy Morris was doing great, but when we lost him, shouldn't we have made some effort to replace him and not rely entirely on Maroney? Says, hell, give Troy Brown the ball. He can do everything else, right? Not running back. Well, I don't think they have to go that far. No sense in banging Troy up anymore anyway. But fact is that now I don't think they're going to step out and do anything differently from what they've been doing. And I think they felt like they were deep enough, you know. And Kevin Faulk, just like the previous emailer said, Kevin Faulk seems like he's always there to get the yards when you need them. So if Faulk is able to do it, then you know, no. Why go out and waste a roster spot on another running back? I kind of agree with that call. And then finally, he says, the aging defense. Okay, here's where you get emotionally torn. We all love Brewski, Vrabel, Sayal, but are they slowing down? I guess so. However, I think Bill has done a good job of mixing in younger players with the veterans. Now, true, we're not the brick wall we've been in the past, but it aggravates me to hear guys like the PFW bozos, he says, saying Rodney sucks, Brewski sucks, etc. How dare you? These are the same guys who won rings not too long ago, and then they lose a step and they suddenly suck? Well, with that, we welcome in Brian Lowe from Patriots Today. B-Lo, what's up, man?
Just doing great. How are you?
I'm great. Excellent.
Good.
It's rambunctious here in New York today.
New York, huh?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Baby. Townsville twice, they named it twice, or whatever. Townsville nice, they named it twice.
They love their Knicks there, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
That's the team to root for, right?
They're asking a question I saw on First and Ten on ESPN earlier today. You know, how does Isaiah save his job? And honestly, it's because he has pictures. You know, you've got to expose the pictures that he has based on what's going on. You know, because the Knicks get fined, what was it, $11.5 million was the settlement in that whole sexual harassment case? It's a joke. The only thing, it's really, you know you're not in good shape when the Giants are the positive thing going in this town.
Yeah, well.
And everybody loves to bitch about the Giants, so.
And they don't have the Jets to fall back on. I think the Yankees haven't won the World Series in like 8 years or something like that.
Yeah.
The Mets had a major collapse. I'm not sure how the Rangers and Islanders are doing this year, but.
Who cares? It's hockey.
Yeah, yeah. So New York, good times though today, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy. So why don't you speak to that question a little bit about the aging defense? I know there's been some criticism of those guys who are getting older, and we've had some emailers already say, can't believe that anybody would save Darren McFadden, you know, to draft because of the defense and yada, yada. And I think that's something that you and I have talked about before. But, you know, quite frankly, I think some of the times the criticism is done tongue in cheek because there's just really very little to criticize overall when you're 13-0.
Yeah, I think I jumped in the middle of you talking about that or that email. But, yeah, I mean, as far as the aging defense, well, first of all, I don't think they're going to draft Darren McFadden, but I think that's because I don't think they're going to draft a running back that high. That's just me. We can get into that separately if you'd like.
Right.
But as far as the aging defense, I think the defense is just fine with the ages that they're at, as long as no one goes down, as long as they realize that they're not all that deep in a lot of areas on defense. You know, I don't mind Teddy Bruschi and Junior Seau being your starting middle linebackers, but we've got to make sure that, you know, we don't overdo it with them as far as a workload, because we don't really have much behind them that can step right in. So, you know, as far as the season's going along, they've been, knock on wood, pretty lucky in that department as far as the health and their linebackers or in their defense in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to be able to rely on Teddy Bruschi, Jr., Seau, Rodney Harrison forever, and they know that. But, you know, they're trying to get through this season. I think they can with the guys they have.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I do believe now, and I'm going to believe probably more strongly once the season is completed, but I do think that they've got to address, you know, the age and the factor on defense. And
long-term,
certainly,
that is a major dilemma. It's not like every team is, you know, it's not like there's no dilemmas here long-term. There are plenty of them. You know, they've got, you know, the defensive line, pretty good shape as far as age and skill level. But, you know, as we've talked about it, linebacker, not the same story. You know, in the secondary, it's kind of a mix. You know, I think that they have long range issues there, and the trouble with that, especially at linebacker, a much discussed dilemma, is the fact that they struggle to find the right fits coming out of college to play linebacker in the pros in this system.
Right.
We've seen that, you know, time and time again. That's why, you know, when they find a guy like Roosevelt Colvin or they find a guy like Adalis Thomas in free agency who they think is the perfect fit, they're willing to go overboard in the money department, maybe in the years department, than they'd like to, because they know that the best way for them to replenish their depth at linebacker is through young veterans who have proven what they can do in the NFL, ideally in that specific system. Not the same when you're looking for linebackers coming out of college. We've seen how few they've taken in the draft, how few linebackers they've taken in the draft, and how few of them have panned out.
Right, absolutely. All right, Bilo, let's get some of your thoughts then on Pittsburgh before we completely turn it over to the Jets hate fest this week. Number one, obviously the Patriots clinched the first round bye in the playoffs, so I think that's obviously something that we knew was inevitable, but it did happen after the win on Sunday. The other thing that I thought we needed to mention here that kind of skipped under the radar is the fact that Coach Belichick won his 100th game as a Patriots head coach.
Yeah.
I know he didn't probably count them personally, but fact is that he's got 100, you know, and so he's, you know, it's just a sign of success, but it is a bench watermark.
Oh, it's a major sign of success, because if you figure a 10-win season is a pretty good year in the NFL, just talking relative,
right,
then that takes 10 years to do. Obviously, Belichick's done it now in his eighth year. So, you know, what's he averaging? 11-something wins?
Right.
11 or 12, yeah. which is remarkable. And when you take into account the first year was 5-11, you talk about this 6-year period, is pretty remarkable. So absolutely a huge accomplishment. You know, that's obviously an organization-wide accomplishment. You have that many wins in that period of time. So, yeah, probably a bit of an overlooked milestone from that game based on, you know, the other numbers that took place on the field.
Right.
But as far, you know, I mean, if you were asking, originally there how, you know, my thoughts on the game.
Yep.
Or on, you know, I think I actually, you know, and I have a few witnesses to this, I called 37-17. I really thought that
they... No way!
I did.
Wow.
So why don't I give myself a pat on the back?
You were close. You were very close.
I'll give myself a pat on the back there. Yeah, you know, I thought they'd jump out to an early lead. I didn't think it would be as close as it was, you know, to start the second half. I thought they'd jump out to an early lead and have a comfortable way through. I just, you know, My feeling towards this game from last Monday night at midnight to Saturday just changed tremendously. Last Monday night after the Baltimore game, I'm thinking this is really going to be a tough one. This might be their toughest test. Short week after two, you know, hard-fought games that went 60 minutes, as they talked about, going against a pretty good team. And then a little more and more, you know, I started looking at some of the games that Pittsburgh had and some of the teams that they lost to, some of the teams that they had beaten that aren't all that good. You know, I really, really did feel as though the Anthony Smith comments would be something that they would use. I didn't think they'd go after him in quite the way they did, after him specifically. But, you know, just knowing the way they operate here, Wednesday through Saturday, after a comment like that is made, they say, we don't even know about it, we ignore it, doesn't even matter, anything like that. During and after the game, they make it clear that, you know, they did hear it, and it did affect them. Now, does it make sense that they would let a comment from a second-year safety who none of them knew before last week affect what they do? It doesn't really make sense, but that's what they do.
Right.
That is what helps them, and who are we to argue? You know, so I just, more and more as last week went on, I had the feeling that they were ready to, ready for another, I'm not going to call it a blowout. It certainly wasn't a blowout, even though it was a 20-whatever-point win, 21-point
mm-hmm,
win.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a feeling that they were going to come out and win it somewhat comfortably.
Wow.
I did.
Good
I
for
mean,
you.
Hey, but then
but
again,
you know what, though,
I thought they were going to demolish Philadelphia by 35 points. So don't give me a lot of credit.
Well, but still, you know, you're around the team. That's why we ask you your thoughts in this, because you're around those guys all the time, and we want to know where that's concerned. Now, I want to turn to the offense for a second, because obviously there are some significant things that are coming up that this team is about ready to get into. We're talking NFL history stuff. First of all, 500 points for the season, which they surpassed this week.
Yeah.
Now, the Patriots are the 11th team in history in the 88 years in the NFL to score 500 points in a single season. Vikings, of course, hold the record at 556. Certainly that is reachable in the last two weeks.
Man.
The other thing is that the Patriots have now scored 65 touchdowns for the season, is seventh already in NFL history. The 84 Dolphins hold the record with 70 touchdowns. And again, something that's imminently reachable, if not this season, maybe this week.
Yep. Yeah, and the other one is that points per game average that they're hovering right around, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It is remarkable when you consider that they still have three more games to go, and they are playing three teams that might not have anything to play for in those games. Obviously, with the Giants, I'm talking about they might be locked into a playoff spot as opposed to the Jets and Dolphins, who really have nothing to play for. The fact that they are on that pace and on the verge, you know, with Brady and Moss specifically talking about those individual records, the touchdown passing and touchdown receiving records.
Right, right, right.
You know, there were probably some people who started to get a little nervous after, the Baltimore and Philadelphia games where, you know, Brady only threw, a combined three or four touchdowns, and Moss only caught a combined one touchdown in those games, and their pace started to slow down a little bit. This past game was probably a little more reassuring. You know, four more touchdowns for Brady, two more for Moss, another 100-something yards for Moss. So now Brady is four behind Manning and five to take over, and he's had a couple of five-touchdown games this year.
Right.
Moss is, three touchdowns behind
three
the record?
Three touchdowns away, right.
You know, he had a four-touchdown half earlier this year. So, the official watch on some of these records begins on Sunday, and I'm sure we're not going to get too many players this week to talk about looking forward to those records being broken, but you can bet that 68,000-something people here are going to be keeping tabs on all that. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I think most, if not all, those records are probably going to be broken by this team.
The other one that I think that is certainly reachable is Brady's team passing mark. He's got three games left of which to pass Bledsoe's, 45-55, I think, was the record in 94?
Sounds right. He passed. Yeah, and he passed, so he is about 500-something.
He's got a shot at 5,000 yards.
He does. He's at 4...
He's at 4,095.
Yeah, so 900-something yards in three games. I mean, 330...
He's got a shot.
He's got a shot. And you know, the other factor favoring these points, and especially the passing records, is the fact that the Patriots don't have a great running game, and as they proved last week against Pittsburgh, they aren't going to go overboard to make sure the running game is implemented, and whether it be game plan wise or whether it be game flow-wise, if you know what I mean. You know, they're not too concerned with going into the game knowing that they're going to run the ball X number of times, and they're not too concerned if they have a 20-point lead that we got to run the ball. They didn't run the ball much at all. So that'll play into the idea that they can break all these passing records if they don't feel the need to rely on Maroney or even use Maroney too much. I mean, he ran the ball 8 times the other day. So, you know, Brady's throwing the ball. No, you know, teams better not be surprised by that.
Right. He's throwing the ball, and then obviously Randy Moss still catching it. And Moss now is over 1,200 yards receiving this year. He's got a shot at passing Stanley Morgan's team mark of 1,491.
A very good shot. You know, that blip being the Pittsburgh and Baltimore games where he combined for less than 100 yards.
Right.
Seems to be an aberration. Hey, we saw what he did against the Jets in the first game of the year. That was the one where – that was the wild card game, as in – no one knew what to expect. He hadn't hit the field once in a Patriots uniform, preseason or otherwise. And he really, you know, exploded onto the scene that day. So the question is, do the Jets have an answer for him this week after having been the guinea pig back in week one? I wouldn't think that the Dolphins are going to have much of an answer for him.
No.
They're probably going to have their bags packed, ready to hit the offseason. And then who knows with the Jets. So, I mean, I think he could have a 100-yard game in all three games and easily pass that mark. And, you know, and if he doesn't, hey, Wes Welker, well, maybe he'll break the team record for catches in a year. Or maybe, who knows, maybe Gaffney will you know, explode again. You know, they're close on a lot of these, and I don't think they're going to be seeing defenses that are going to really have an answer.
Probably not.
The rest of the way.
All right, let's see if we can sneak in a few more emails again here. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, of course, as usual. John Rook and Brian Lowe. Brian's in Foxborough, Gillette Stadium. I'm at the ESPN Zone in New York and Times Square. It's cold here, too. Is
I took
it cold
in
at
the,
home?
You know, it's chilly. Chilly today. It's been a chilly stretch, as you know. I went to the ESPN Zone in Baltimore last week.
Did you? What did you think of it?
Oh, it's great.
Because I was talking about it early and trying to give, you know, the sense, if you've never been to this one, what it was like here. And obviously, if you've been to any ESPN Zone, then you know that's obviously a great place to
go. Yeah, I think, actually, I've been to the one in New York. I haven't been to the one in Orlando. So they're all pretty good. They're all pretty
good.
The
one in Orlando is right there on the boardwalk.
Yeah, right on the boardwalk.
Cool.
Nice setting there, yeah. And the Baltimore one is on, you know, the Inner Harbor, right there in the Inner Harbor. And New York is, you know, you can't have a bad location.
Well, it's spectacular there. In here, yeah. I know. So they've got, actually, 1, 2, 3, 4 different floors here. And up on the top floor is where the game room and all that kind of stuff is located. And then I'm on the second floor, which is away from the crowd. And it's where the big, you know, the big studio screens and the big booths with the plush couches and all that kind of stuff.
Now, do you have like a big, you know, Patriots playbook banner or Patriots.com?
I wish.
Banner? Oh,
no. But I am in the fishbowl of a radio studio right out here, pretty much off to the side, but in the middle where everybody can see you up here.
People so waving? People waving at you?
I've had many people stop by and just stare and say, who's the geek talking to himself?
Do you have an escort to escape the radio studio when you're done?
Okay,
because
I'm
be
on my own.
Bombarded.
I'm on my own. I'll be making a beeline out of here, right, so to
there
speak.
You go.
All right, so here we go. This one comes from John, who says, I'm worried about the Jets, but not about them winning. He says, a blowout? Probably not. I'm looking at the Jets as one of those teams, like the Ravens and Eagles. They have nothing to lose, nothing. They can cause a lot of problems for us by playing the same way. You'll know they'll target Brady, they'll target Moss, they'll do what they can to hurt us. Do they have a chance to win? No. Do they have a chance to mess up our perfect season? Maybe. I still feel we'll win, and win decisively, but my hope for the game is that we have a monster first half and let Brady and Moss break their respective records and then sit down and let Castle, even better, Gutierrez take the field. And he goes out on a limb already and says 41-14.
What do you say? Do they have a chance to win? No. Do they have a chance to break up the perfect season? Maybe.
Well, I think he's saying because, you know, if somebody stays in too long and somebody gets dinged up, they're not available.
Oh, okay.
And that would be, in a lot of sense, and I understand that thought process, in a lot of ways, that would be almost as good as a win simply because you'd mess them up for later in the year. It'd be kind of like a cockroach, you know?
Yeah.
Dropping in the whole batch of potato salad, they're messing up the whole picnic for everybody.
A little bit. Yeah. Well, look, I think the Jets have a little bit of fight in them. You know, they'll come out and compete. I don't think they're going to lay down and just let the Patriots trample all over them. I think they might have a little bit of pride, and there might be enough guys there who understand, you know, that there's a rivalry here, and you know, we'll sort of see if they have what kind of respect and what kind of love they have for their own coach. You know, if they do lie down, then that probably shows that, well, they don't really care much for their coach. But I don't think that'll be the case. I think they're gonna compete, but I think, you know, that can only take you so far. The talent level is staggering, and as we've seen, the Patriots are not, worried about just putting the pedal to the metal and steamrolling teams if they have the chance. I mean, I think bottom line, it comes down to talent level, a talent level that is a staggering difference. And, the Jets will come out fighting hard, but, you know, it's the NFL. That only takes you so far.
Right. You know. I agree. Dave says 38-0 already. I mentioned a little bit earlier that what would you prefer in terms of a route? Would you prefer a 63-13 or a 38-0? Dave says 38-0. They will test their running game. So, and frankly, I think putting the zero on somebody is much more demoralizing than hanging half a hundred.
Yeah, which they haven't done, right?
No.
They haven't done this year.
I'm guessing that if they really want to demoralize the Jets, they're going to keep them off the scoreboard.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I could see that being the a little bit of a motivating factor. Hey, let's get a shutout this year at home, you know, against a division rival. That's an interesting one.
It's possible.
That's an interesting one. I mean, you know, there's other factors involved. You know, special teams play could ruin that. But, I think the defense, the Patriots defense had a lot of pride in how they performed this past Sunday, specifically in the red zone, third down. So there might be a little bit of rejuvenation as far as their mentality, and maybe they will go into that game with thinking about that. You know, they'll be thinking about stopping the Jets every time.
Sure,
so
absolutely,
that's an interesting thought.
Ray says, "Who exactly would determine if the official records show an asterisk after a record? Obviously the writer, but I mean for the NFL, the poor sportsmanship displayed by the idiot who had the plane fly over shows that some people seem to miss the fact that the incident now known as Spygate happened in the very first half of the first quarter of the first game of the year. So what? Get over it." I didn't see that. Did you?
I didn't see it, but I've heard enough about it, and I did see there was one TV station, I think, that had a shot of it. I saw it on TV. I don't think much of it. I mean, it takes one person to just decide, hey, I'm going to have some fun and do this. I don't think Eric Mangini authorized it. I don't think it was anything like that. I mean, you know, it was a meaningless thing. As far as the asterisk in general, I mean, what is it, the New York Daily News or something that's been running the NFL standings
with an asterisk all year?
I mean, it's meaningless. Who, right. you know, whether you feel that there should be an asterisk or not, There won't be an official asterisk. I mean, you know,
it's just silly right now.
It's
stupid. What it shows pettiness. It shows ignorance. And, you know, it's stupid. It just shows ignorance is really what it boils down to.
It's stupid, and it's ridiculous. And any team that has any person, player, coach who has gotten suspended for doing something in season in the past, then they probably deserve an asterisk too, because maybe that, you know, if a guy gets suspended for steroids, or for illegal, substances, he was probably using them at some point during the year that he got busted. Should they get an asterisk? It's ridiculous. And I mean, the plane flying overhead was probably, if anything, or some people may have seen it as a humorous thing as opposed to anything that to be taken serious. But
right.
I brush that off as, you know, all it takes is one person with a pilot's license to, and the ability to make a flag or a banner. Who cares?
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, you know, but that's... Yeah.
There
goes another one.
There it is, right above us here. It should be passing over Sports Zone, ESPN Sports Zone. Crashed. Yeah. I was going to say it'd be over ESPN Sports Zone in New York in a few minutes. But
I know. Well, what do you think? What do you think the focus will be, and rightfully should be, this week? I know that the guys are going to get asked a lot about, you know, revenge factor and picking up for their coach and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Even though, you know, they're going to say otherwise, but you know what's in the back of their minds, because they're not idiots. They do pay attention to what we talk about and what anybody else talks about on the talk shows and television and, you know, and read the newspapers, everything else like that. So, you know, how much of a factor do you think really Spygate will be this week?
Not too much, because I don't know how much, you know, the players themselves, you know, I think the players grasp something like an opposing player making a guarantee more than they do something that's almost more of like an organizational, Patriots versus Jets or Mangini, you know, caught us cheating and all that. I don't think they grasp that as much from a motivating to play standpoint. I think what we're going to hear out of them is it's a divisional game at home, and that's the bottom line. We like to win our divisional games. We want to sweep through the division. I don't think we're going to hear them, you know, say anything about this. They certainly won't. And I don't really think that as they go about their practices and as they go about their meetings, that it's really even going to be a focus of them behind the scenes. I really don't. I think that Belichick might have some feeling inside that I want to get back at this guy, but I don't really, I don't know how much that's going to affect him this week either. And I heard some of Mangini's comments yesterday where he, all he said was, that was earlier in the season. We're not talking about that. And he kind of talked a little bit about Belichick and his relationship with Belichick and all that. I don't think he's going to be thinking much of it either. I don't think he's going to be a huge factor from a preparation standpoint. But I think the Patriots have been going into every game thinking we want to stomp on this team as much as possible. And that's what they're going to do this week, too. I don't know. I don't think it's going to play a huge role in the way they operate over the course of the week. And I think they're just going to operate the same way they do every week, and we just want to stomp over this team. We just want to stomp right through them, which is what they've been doing all year. What do you think? You think that?
I absolutely think that. I mentioned earlier in the show that I really believe that this week we're going to find out if the Patriots have been pulling the wool over our eyes all season long, because they say they look at things on a week to week basis and they don't pay attention, and there's no such thing as hatred, and they're not out for revenge, and they're just out on focusing and playing that opponent. Yet, we all know that usually is just said for show, that they usually end up thinking and believing differently. So we're going to find out how much differently, because quite frankly, if they're smart, they wouldn't have let Spygate affect them, but they're also going to want to prove something based on the fact that they feel like their head coach's image has been tarnished.
Well, that's the one way where it could come into play, in the sense that they stand up for their coach, and if this is something their coach is dealing with, then they're going to do whatever they can for their coach to support him. But I still don't know exactly how that plays out on the field, more so than in any of these other games that they've played.
Right.
I think that's what I'm saying, but are they going to come out with more emotion and more firepower at the very beginning of this game than they did at the very beginning of the Washington game or the Miami game? I don't think that's humanly possible for an NFL team. I mean, they were up on the Dolphins 28-0 at halftime. I mean, can you do 35 or 42? I mean, does that make it better? Does that make you feel? I'm just saying that I think ever since week one, they've been going out with a certain mentality in every game, and they're going to continue that mentality this week, whether it's the Jets or not. The Jets are not as good a team as Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, some of the other teams that they've played recently, where maybe they didn't jump out to a 28-0 lead. So maybe they will this week, but it's more because the talent is different and not as good than it is because the Jets caught us cheating. I don't know.
I
think that they could come out to a huge early lead because they're that much better.
Yeah. Looking here at the long-range weather forecast, snow maybe on Sunday.
Yeah,
I'm
not a big fan of long-range weather forecasts. Sometimes the night before, sometimes at 11 o'clock on a given night, I'll see what the weather's going to be the next morning, so I should know if I should wear a sweater or an extra jacket.
I'm not huge
on long-range weather forecasts because, A, I got 4 or 5 days in between to deal with, and, B, they're usually not necessarily correct. So, give me a call on Saturday night, John, if you don't mind. Let me know how I should dress the next day, and then I'll pass that along to the players and tell them. No, I'm just kidding around. I think snow would be great. I mean, I think the Patriots are going to beat the Jets in whatever conditions there are and whatever time of the game or whatever. But hey, I'm all for a little snow on a game. I don't mind that.
Why not?
Although Gary's giving me a I'm up in the press box now, and like you are, John, and Gary isn't. So
bring it. All right, what's on Patriots today for us?
Well, we are talking a little bit about the historical perspective of some of these records that we've talked about, Brady and Moss, going a little bit more in depth on what the Patriots were able to do defensively against Pittsburgh, specifically in the red zone. Actually, there was an interesting little event here at the stadium today. Wes Welker and Dan Copen were involved in an event with some high school kids from all six New England states, with the goal being financial mindset and how to save your money and how to set financial goals for yourself. It's actually an NFL sponsored event. We were over there talking to some of the kids and some of the players. So actually, kind of an interesting little non-football or football related, but off the beaten path kind of feature that we'll have in today's show. So
beautiful.
Should be a good one. And what do you got? What game is tonight?
What game is tonight? Actually, the game tonight is looking at the back of my eyelids.
Oh, is that right? Good for you.
Nothing
good
for me. I got a game tomorrow night.
There you go.
But we'll be doing tomorrow's playbook from normal time, normal spot. Usually, as the PFW guys say, my mom's basement. even though it's my own basement, but we'll be same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow, and we'll continue to look forward to the Jets combat.
Beautiful.
Right?
I'm in.
Excellent. I will see you Sunday, if not before.
Absolutely. Thanks, John. Thanks,
Bilo. Appreciate that. All right, before we wrap up the program then, we'll sign off here from ESPN Zone in Times Square in Manhattan, home of the Jets, so to speak. But we will let you hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, especially if you have not had a chance to hear him wrap up the Steeler win, then we'll get to that for you today. Tomorrow's program, more of the same, of course, and we continue to focus on the countdown to history, the fact that the Patriots will be looking for 14-0, and the Jets are in their way this next Sunday afternoon at home. It is a 1 o'clock kickoff, I think, isn't it? Yeah, I know the Dolphins game got flexed to 4:15, but I think this one's still a good old-fashioned 1 o'clock kickoff Eastern time on Sunday, which is it's good. Day football again. Wow. What a unique idea. Here he is, Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, coming up after this timeout.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots extra points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots extra points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots extra points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats! Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CMS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Well, it was, not really too much different from what we talked about yesterday after the game. Proud of the players. Thought they, executed pretty well against a real good football team. We made some big plays offensively and, had a couple good drives there when we needed them. Pittsburgh blitzed us a lot. Really, it was almost ball blitz. Just blitz upon the whole day. And defensively, we played better in the red area and the goal line. Made a couple big stops there that helped us. Special teams, that was got a turnover there that we couldn't take advantage of. But it was a heads up play by our punt team, James and Larry and those guys. And got a good return there from Chad and answer their first score. Certainly some things we could have done better in that phase of the game too. But I thought we had some plays when we needed them. Team play. Played with poise, played hard. It was a physical game. Sure, we got a lot of sore guys in our locker room today or tomorrow, whenever they come in. And sure, Pittsburgh does too. It was at that type of a game. So, try to put that one behind us and move on. Got a couple games in the division here. Coming up, so the Jets, who we saw quite a bit of last week in watching them play Pittsburgh. We know what kind of football team they have and the job they did against the Steelers. That was an impressive win. So that's where we're at today.
Randy said he was lobbying you and the rest of the coaching. That from the time he got here to throw the ball. How did he convince you guys to let him?
Yeah, Randy can throw. he made a nice play there where he, after he dropped it, picked it up and slung about to Tom. I think Tom put it well that Randy threw him ball better than Tom threw it to Randy. But, no, he's got a good arm, can throw the ball. And I know it's just a play we've had in for a little while and just had a good opportunity yesterday to, you know, to run it. It was well executed, though. We didn't really plan on, you know, Randy dropping it, but he did enough to kind of help get everybody over there when he threw it back to Tom. Get everybody over there when he threw it back to Tom.
Nobody left on the back side.
And Jabbar did a good job of selling it. And you know, it was 10 yards behind the defense. So these plays are always great when they work, you know.
You utilized Chad in the kicking game. Kicks and punts, how did you feel he did, and what went behind the thing you used in there?
We thought that was the best way to utilize the personnel in the game. I thought he did a good job. There's some other things that, you know, could have been better, you know, like the kickoff return. We, you know, handled the ball a little bit cleaner. I thought, you know, getting the ball back up to midfield after they scored was good. I made a good catch on the punt. That was, you know, a short ball. If he could have kept his feet, there might have been a big play there. But, you know, at least didn't hit the ground and, you know, roll 20 yards like he usually does when you don't catch it. So, you know, some good things. There's some other things he can keep working on.
Bill, obviously, offense made some big plays, but the defense did too. There were a couple of plays in particular I wanted you to talk about. One was Vince Wilfork's sack. He talked a little bit afterwards about how he had picked up a call that Roethlisberger had made, and he kind of anticipated that it would be the same blocking scheme, and he made a spin move on it. So that, and also the fourth down stop that Harrison made on the goal line, he talked about having remembered seeing that play before and anticipating that with Ward coming over. Can you just talk about both of those plays?
Well, you know, I think Vince's comment on his play is a lot more than I can add. You know, they're it's a kind of, you know, the game within a game that goes out there with the on the offensive and defensive lines where you're just, you know, lining up that far away from the other guy for, you know, 50, 60, 70 plays, whatever it is in the game. And, you know, picking up a little, you know, a call or a stance or a weight distribution or the way a guy kind of looks. I mean, that's stuff you just don't see on film. And it's hard to, as a coach from the sideline, you know, use, and that's the kind of thing that Vince is, I know Vince is a smart guy. Vince picks up a lot of things. We talk about it when he comes over to the sideline, you know, about I can read this, I can read that. And he's right. He can read it, and he's, you know, and he's right on those things. So it doesn't surprise me that type of thing happens because he's very astute, and he's got enough experience to kind of know when to, you know, when to take a chance on it and when not to. And I think he executes very good judgment on that. You know, the fourth down play was, you know, Mike Vrabel did a great job at the point of attack. You know, he kind of pushed the wing back, and when Ward got the ball, he couldn't really cut up and couldn't really, would have had to give more ground to get outside. And, you know, Rodney had him in man-to-man coverage, so when he trailed him over and took the handoff, you know, he kind of was in good position to make the play as long as as the ball kind of got held up a little bit, which it did. But I think that was, you know, had a lot to do with Vrabel, you know, pushing a line of scrimmage back, and Ward kind of had to throttle down, and then, you know, it wasn't much space for him to work in. You know, usually you get the ball guy in a little bit of space, and you feel like he can make a yard, you know, one way or the other by just kind of squirting through there, and that's high percentage football. But, you know, Mike and Rodney both, you know, did a good job on that. Rodney made a good tackle on it. So, but yeah, you know, after we got past the first series, or that first long drive that Pittsburgh had, then our third down defense was better, and our red area defense, you know, we were able to make a couple plays there too. So those were good situational downs for us on the defensive side of the ball, and that helped us, one, like I said, once we got past that first series.
On your first scoring drive, in second possession, there was a play where Lawrence sort of surged ahead for 10 yards. As a scrum sort of formed, Randy came out of nowhere and just really bashed it. I think it was Ike Taylor, and they sort of looked at each other. Do you think Randy was sort of, you know, setting a tone that we could be as physical as you guys are with that? I don't know if you noticed that.
No, I think our receivers overall have done a good job blocking better than we've done in some other years in the past. Not saying it's perfect, but I think they do a pretty good job. I thought yesterday in particular they did a good job of blocking. Jabbar, Randy, Dante, Wes, they all, you know, I thought did a good job of blocking downfield. And there were a couple times when, like Randy, you know, peeled Taylor off the pile, did another time, you know, on a swing pass to Gaffney. You know, Dante had a couple good blocks in there. Gaffney had a couple. Welker, you know, had a couple too. So they did a good job of blocking for each other and blocking downfield. But I think overall they've done a pretty good job of that this year. Like I said, better than probably overall than what we've had, you know, in the past for a while. So, you know, that's a good part of their unselfish play, and it helps everybody else out. But I thought the offensive line on that particular play, you know, Lawrence stayed on his feet and you know, showed the kind of strength that he had. And, you know, Logan and Copen and those guys were kind of in the pile. They just kind of kept pushing too. And like you said, before you know it, 2 yards was 10.
Is there any formula that you use with rotation of your defensive linemen? I mean,
No, we try to utilize them, but it's not any set formula. Sometimes it's by personnel groups, you know, nickel or dime, kind of like we do on offense when we a certain back or a certain tight end will go in with a certain group of receivers where that, you know, we have a name for that, you know, group A, group B, group C. Well, you know, you go in on your group. And we do that sometimes on defense too, as it goes from our base defense to our, you know, some of our subgroupings. But then beyond that, then there's just a normal rotation, and that's done very unscientifically, you know, based on, you know, what we feel like is, could be a variety of reasons, but what we feel like is the time to make a change or to substitute or roll them in. And sometimes that's a function of what's going on in the kicking game, as well as what's going on offense or defense. So I know another question was about the defensive line, but really it rolls into every group in the on the team.
You can make those on the fly based on sort of flow of the game and whatever?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. And sometimes the players make them on their own, although we don't do a lot of that. But, you know, occasionally a player will, you know, will come out because he, you know, got a sore something got hit on the play before or whatever, and comes out, and then he'll go back in, you know. So sometimes it's that too. But, you know, we'll substitute based on some weeks it's down and distance, some weeks it's the personnel they put in, sometimes it's just to kind of give our guys a little bit of a break. Sometimes we know a certain player is going to be in all one group, and so we sub for him in a different group, just, you know, to try to balance out the, you know, the reps. And sometimes we feel like a certain situation is more important than another one, and so we want to make sure we have our players in on that situation, and then if we're going to rotate, it will be in a different situation. So, again, so to answer your question, there's no set formula over the course of a season. There may be a set formula for one particular game, but that fluctuates too.
What's your impression of the Jets? Last year they were a playoff team. This year...
My impression of them was in the Pittsburgh game. They played very well, and they beat Pittsburgh. So I haven't seen, you know, yesterday's game, but we watched the Pittsburgh game pretty carefully because we, you know, are watching Pittsburgh. So we'll get rolling on the Jets, you know, this afternoon and into the week. So, you know, they did a good job against the Steelers.
Obviously, the events of the first week are going to be rehashed in the build-up to this game. What's going to be your approach, and is there going to be any extra motivation for you and the team?
We're going to approach it like every other game.
Which is?
Just the way we've done all. Come in, look at the film, get together a game plan, try to figure out the best way to attack and defend them.
Any extra motivation?
Try to win. We're going to do the same thing we do. We try to win every week. I mean, believe it or not, it may not look like it at times, but we do. We try to play our best game out there every week, and we try to win every week. And so we're going to try to win this week.
Is there a point where you weigh bigger picture against individual games? And the obvious point being that if and when you win your next game or Indianapolis loses.
Right. Well, right now that's not doesn't really come into play, so... I'm not going to worry about it. We're not going to talk about it. We're going to try to win the next game.
There's been a general, at least it appears from this side of it, that there's always been a, play each game independently. Is there a benefit?
Absolutely. And that's exactly right. That's what it is. I mean, people try to make more out of it than that, but that you've got it. That's all it is. Just try to play this game for what it is.
Is there a benefit to that approach even when there might not be anything that is that tangible at stake, is what I'm getting at?
Well, I don't know how to approach the game any other way. I mean, we're playing a team this week, so what should we do, talk about some other game? Or what's the point of that? Talk about something that happened a month ago or last week or that might happen sometime in the future, which is so unpredictable. It's hard enough to predict what's going to happen a couple days from now. Think about, well, this is something that might happen a month from now. I mean, so we don't spend a lot of time on that. In fact, I would say zero.
And like, for instance, Anthony Smith's comments clearly gave everybody a little juice yesterday. So what happened with the Jets after week one? That doesn't provide any extra juice this week.
What happened yesterday was a function of our players executing some plays better than the Steelers and some plays not as good. So that's, I don't think there's no points for any quotes that were or weren't in the paper. Plays that we executed well, we gained yards on. The plays that we didn't gain yards on. And there was some of both. Plays that we executed good on defense, they didn't gain too many yards. There were several plays we didn't execute very well. They gained plenty of them. So.
You don't feel that the fallout from that Jets game has had any impact at all on your season?
I'm telling you that we're going to approach this game like we approached the last one, the one before that, and the one before that. That's all I can tell you.
Bill, did Smith's aggressive nature towards the run allow you to scheme play action plays a little better and go over the top with him?
Those are plays that are part of our offense, so we run them. We've run them in the past. And, you know, I think that's the decision that the defensive backs have to make. It's whether they want to try to come up and help in the running game or whether they want to stay back and create more space in the running game and defend, you know, the deeper part of the field. But I think that the offensive line and you know, the ball handling and all, were it was good action. You know, it sold the play pretty good. And, you know, Randy was down bad on the second touchdown or on Randy's his second touchdown. Yeah, you know, he came out and put a good move on Taylor, held him outside and beat him to the post. I'm not sure really whether the safety was supposed to be there or not. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how they were keying or playing the play. So you'd have to ask them that, whether Taylor had him all the way or whether he was getting help. I'm not really sure. You know, that's something only they could answer.
Bill, you talked about the Jets' win over the Steelers and how impressive that was. Given the nature of that win, are you surprised the Jets haven't had more performances like that this year?
Well, I think, you know, I have a lot of respect for the Jets. Just players. I mean, they have some outstanding players, and You know, they played very well against Pittsburgh. So I can't tell you what happened in all the other games. The only games I'm really familiar with are our first game with them and then this Pittsburgh game because of the amount of time that we spent watching Pittsburgh last week. So the rest of it, you know, we'll catch up on in the next couple days and try to be ready to go when the team comes in on Wednesday.
Phil, you hit Fager to a pretty stiff penalty. Are there any lingering feelings you have to the fallout of that, either toward the NFL or the Jets, even for raising?
I'm trying to get ready for this game against the Jets. That's what I'm trying to do.
Phil, just jumping back to Jack's electronic kicks for a second. Is there ever a point where the division of labor can make players better at specific tasks? In other words, is any of the logic to, you know, just divide the labor and not have Hobbs doing as much? Or?
I think that when you have, sure, when you take, when you take your 45 players to the game, you decide how you want to go into the game, how you want to distribute all the different jobs that have to be done amongst those 45 players. And a lot of times when you make the decision on the final roster, that's taken into consideration is how you want to break it up. And whichever player you decide is your 43rd, 44th, 45th, whatever it is, then basically what you're deciding is that player has a more important role than the 46th, 47th, or 48th. And that's not to say that if we could dress those guys, we would dress them, and we would play them. You know, they wouldn't just dress. They would play, but you're limited. So you have to decide how you want to do it. And it's hard to take, you know, players to the game. Now, you know, the quarterback and backup linemen fall into a little bit different category in terms of their utilization because of the position that they play. You know, they don't, for the most part, play in the kicking game and things like that. So truly they're insurance players, but you know, you have to balance your depth on offense and defense with, you know, the plays that you need guys to do on special teams and all the different situational plays that come up, and that's how you decide on your roster, on your final 45-man roster, if you have a choice. Now there's some weeks where you only have 45 healthy guys and those are the ones you take, but if you have more than that, which was the case for us last week, then you have to decide which ones you're going to take and how you're going to distribute those jobs.
This sounds silly, but can the fact that Jackson returns kicks make Hobbs more effective at the defensive back? Is there at all a link?
Well, again, I think it's a question of breaking it up, yeah. I'm not sure exactly how to characterize what the benefits are, but there's some. I agree with what you're saying to a point. I'm not sure what the percentages are and how exactly it breaks down. But, yeah, I think in theory, you know, if you have one guy out there doing everything, you know, returning all the kicks, playing all the plays on offense or defense, covering all the kicks, doing, you know, that maybe if he played a few less plays, he might be a little more effective on the ones that he's playing. I think that there's some truth to that. I'm not saying that's the case in every situation, but I think there's some truth to that. And again, it just depends on, you know, sometimes you'd rather have the guy possibly returning kicks and playing less plays on offense or defense. You know, it just depends on your makeup of the team and what you feel is the most advantageous for you as a team, or it may be in one particular game. Maybe it's not the same for every game.
Bill, now you had a chance to look at the film. How did Eugene Wilson look? It's been quite a while since he had played.
I would put Eugene in the same category I'd probably put most all the players in. I did some good things. There's other plays that could have been better. There's always plays there. So, but it's good to have him back.
Did he seem pretty fluid? I know he'd had the ankle for a while. Did he seem hindered by that? Or?
He hasn't been on the injury report for a couple of weeks, has he?
No.
So, nope.
Bill, prior to the game yesterday, about 2 hours, there was a banner plane. It pulled a banner with an asterisk next to the Super Bowl wins the team has had. It assaulted a lot of Patriots fans. Does it frustrate you or anger you that maybe there's a perception outside of New England that the wins were tainted, or at least the season is tainted after week one?
Yeah, I try to control the things that I can control, and that's what I'm going to do. Coach the team, try to get them ready to play, get our team ready to go. That's what we have control over. Can't control what else is out there. Okay. Thank you.